are again back in Dolphinville, Dolphinville, USA, planet Earth, the constellation here in the edge of the Milky Way, floating through time and space. Welcome to another edition of Dolphinville Radio. We're here with a very special guest, one of our Dolphinville compadres, somebody who's lived and worked as a neighbor of mine these past 5 or 6 years. We've enjoyed the same kind of vibrational frequencies coming up from the Sacred Bay, 19.47 degrees, as it vibrates out on planet Gaia. Jason Starks will be with us today to discuss some of his extraordinary work with a group of entities that he identifies as simply the Nine. And we've heard a lot about channeling in the last several years. Transmediumship has been around for as long as recorded history. Shamans around campfires, and more recently in the last century or so, different people bringing in intelligences. So we're going to talk about that today and some of the work that Jason has been able to share with us through the graces of the Nine, developing some extraordinary workshops and ways of personal exploration and personal enlightenment. So that's going to be very exciting, and I'm looking forward to getting to it. First of all, let me just remind everybody that Dolphinville Radio is being brought to you as a courtesy of Photon.net. Photon.net is an internet service provider. Randy Barris and his friendly crew have been hard at work operating the cyberwaves to bring us this information, a new way of thinking. We are what we believe, and we can create the world if we think we can. Dolphinville is a place where we talk dolphin and play in the cyberwaves, and it's a conscious intention to expand and enjoy here. So we gather with this in mind to celebrate. A new way of thinking and being is currently evolving on this planet. We're a part of it. We can now recognize that there's another bona fide intelligent species besides humans that occupies this world. There's a lot of them. Dolphins and whales are the best example that we have. The physical manifestations that have been here for perhaps millions of years, and we all know now that they have consciousness, and they're willing to share that consciousness. Our own recorded history, the human species have shown and demonstrated thus far our propensity for violence and insensitivity to one another and our environment, but that cycle of existence is now passing. We're now ready for a new season. A new season of higher consciousness and connected awareness. It's now available to anyone who would wish to recognize it and access it. We who live here and swim the dolphins and whales are in their energies. We recognize that they're here to assist us in this huge transition of shifted understanding of our connectivity to all that is. They have had eons of time to understand and move in these such expanded states of awareness. They have actually developed a multidimensional awareness and expanded into these realms. They now stand ready and to encourage us to move into the same realms for ourselves and help in the development of the new human evolution. They're ready for this new level for us to take our roles and our new higher level. Not only do these cetacea, the cetaceans represent this decided shift in our human intellect, getting our minds around another sentient race here on the planet besides humans, but with this new association, we can let go of this isolated separateness that has been part of the cherished wound, if you want to call it, of planet Earth. I consider it an emotional balancing and healing of this troubled heart of mankind. And if we add to the understanding that the dolphins and whales actually represent a spiritual manifestation here on the physical plane, that we can use an example, a mirror for our own spiritual manifestation, then we can move to establish an even higher level of consciousness to connect to them, to connect to the planet, and, of course, to connect to ourselves and become a participant in this whole new unfolding. It's really amazing to be here at this time. And there's so much happening now. We all realize and feel these things. If we're aware and listen to the news or listen to our friends or read the Internet, we know that things are crackling right now, and they have been over the last several years. A new epoch is upon us, and we're part of it. We are the new epoch. So the show here is to open up our minds and hearts to this new sensation and way of being. We want to feel the joy and the peace of this new dimensional awareness, what I call a pod mind mentality that the dolphins and whales are showing us what it's like. It awaits our acceptance and our realization. We're no longer alone in this universe. We can awaken to who we really are. We are light beings connected to the source of all that is. And the dolphins and whales have anticipated this moment for thousands of years. And they're now inviting us to join them in a huge, joyful celebration and recognition of this new understanding, of this new liberated state of being. And I'm really grateful to have this opportunity and inviting you to join me in this great celebration. And that's what Dolphinville is about. And I'm glad you're here to join me. So I want to welcome my guest today, Jason Starks, who I've known for a little over 5 years. When I first met Jason, he was at a good friend's house. I walked in, and there was a beam across the room as our eyes met, and we both kind of lit up with some kind of a sense of recognition. And although we had never met in this physical manifestation in this life cycle, there seemed to be a familiarity. And both of us kind of embraced, as I remember, and just kind of recognized, hello, nice to see you again for the first time. And I was interested to hear what he had to say that night. And I know a lot of the people here in the Dolphinville community have been a part of his workshops and seminars these past 5 and 6 years. Actually, he's been coming to the island for over 10 years and has been sharing his work here for the last 8 or 10 years. And I want to welcome him to the show. Thank you, Jason, for being here. You're an extraordinary person, and you have extraordinary information to share. What happened, and I shared this briefly on the website, it's a copy of your website, is that you were living a regular life in California, husband, a family man, 2 daughters, working in your garden, and then one day something happened, something that changed your life forever.
Right. Yeah. First of all, I want to say how grateful I am to be here and to see the work that you're doing and to be in the energy of it. And to see and feel how well you are doing it, and to be a part of the message that you're bringing, and be a part of that energy. It just feels wonderful. And feeling the sense of connectivity and community that you're establishing and have established, and it's just wonderful to be here and be a part of all of that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Welcome.
And yes, I thought, a normal human being with a normal human experience, when spirit actually came to me in a natural setting, and it's a wonderful story that has been recounted now many times. And that was the beginning of my opening to my spiritual, not only quest, but willingness to be of service. And that was when I sort of opened to all of the energies that I call the 9 coming through me, and agreed to be a conduit for the work that they have here. And that's been going on for quite some time, and it has been a joyous experience. And I have met extraordinary people in the process, and I've learned a lot myself.
I know a lot of people who have had the epiphanal moment of awakening, shall we say, where whatever happened to them, however they characterized it, it shifted, and it was so remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
For some, it's been quite disconcerting and a little bit scary. How was it for you? Was it something that came in gently, or was it a shock?
It was both. It did come in gently, and for my ego, for that part of me and all of us that delineates and keeps us in a sense of individual expression, that experience introduces one to the experience of wholeness, which is, for one's life, an unusual experience, to say the least. And in that moment, and actually there is no time in that moment, because time is simply a convenience for us to break up our experience in a linear way. There is an experience of wholeness and non-linearity and connection to all things. And it was an indelibly imprinted experience that I refer to a great deal since that experience as
It was a real blessing.
Well, how did you know that it was going to lead you on this journey? I mean, first of all, you had the event.
Yes.
And that was shocking enough, but certainly, what opened up this idea that you were to share this with others like this?
Actually, I had asked for that. And part of my personal history is, for a period of time, about 3 years prior to this, I had been called to go to what's called a mystery school in San Francisco. It's no longer in existence. And this was 20-plus years ago that I did this work. That was part of my fulfilling my spiritual commitment, really, to answer this gnawing hunger to know more and to find out what life actually meant. I, at that time, had a wonderful life in Hollywood. I had attained some success that was very satisfying. I had these two lovely daughters and was in a committed relationship and all of those things. And still, as with many people, I was looking for what was missing inside me that could give me a sense of connection to spirit and to the source. And as luck would have it, and as these things work out, synchronistically I was assigned to do some research on a writing project that involved doing an exploitation piece, movie, on the area of spirituality and metaphysics, which took me to the Bodhi Tree bookstore in Los Angeles. And that's like the Akashic Records.
And for anyone who's been to Los Angeles, I would strongly recommend you stop in at this place. It is a remarkable Akashic Record manifest.
Yes, it's still there. And so I spent a lot of time at the Bodhi Tree, I thought, in pursuit of information and knowledge concerning metaphysics and related areas of the occult and all of that. And one day I had this experience where a book fell off a shelf and landed on my foot. And this book was a description, this one person's description, of having attended this particular mystery school in San Francisco. And I took it as a sign and got in touch with the school. And then for 3 years, I would go from Los Angeles to San Francisco on and off to immerse myself in the knowledge that they had for me. And that's where I got introduced to the concepts of channeling and all the rest of what we are that we don't know that we are, at the hands of a woman who was an extraordinary master teacher. And that actually was the beginning of my opening to the nine, only I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. That opening to the nine actually happened 3 years later in the event that we talked about on the website, where I'm in the garden, I'm minding my own business, and they show up, and everything is different and has been different ever since.
Well, one of the extraordinary things that you shared, I remember when you went to pick up a website for the nine.
Right.
You were perusing the available domain names, and you found out that the9.com was already taken.
It was already taken.
By who?
And it was taken by a man who is doing a project on Gene Roddenberry. And it turned out that Gene Roddenberry was guided by the nine and sought counsel from the nine to actually come up with the concepts for Star Trek and all the other shows that he's done since then. And in a codicil in his will stated that sometime after he died, a specific period of time after he passed away, that his story, his true story of how he came up with Star Trek could be told, and it was his relationship with the Nine.
So the Nine, which also interestingly showed up in some of the channelings, mm-hmm, of people in the 70s around Ashland.
Mm-hmm.
Joan Ocean recounts the story of how, and I forget the individual who she was associated with at the time, who was bringing in their energies. Mm-hmm. Now one wonders, is it the same group of Nine, or do they represent a configuration of energy?
It's a configuration of energy.
Okay, so not personality.
It's not personalities. And we're much more comfortable relating to personalities, and spirit is much more impersonal. And if we could call it the hierarchy of spirit, there's certain energies that form that have a specific purpose. and a specific intention. And the nine is one of those energies. And you can have the experience of various individual expressions from within the nine. And that happens often, and people experience that in workshops and in the personal readings. And they are a cohesive kind of gestalt, let's say, more than they are even a collection of personalities. The sum of them is much greater than their nine individual parts or portals or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And they have been here on the planet since, in their latest incarnation, let's say, since the early 60s. And have been working with myself and with Joan and with other people to bring through certain specific information and energies. In fact, they say that energy and information are inseparable. And the frequency of the energy plus the frequency of the information is what's doing the healing work that they are here to do. Mm-hmm. So they bring through very specific transmissions, is a way of saying it. And in the last few years of my doing this work, people have experienced it more as a transmission, as something that is so much beyond the words that are spoken. It is an energetic, is a way of saying it, that is coming from the nine. And that's all intentional and all part of the plan.
There's a nice graphic on your website, which, by the way, is not the9.com. As we know, that is not taken. That was taken. It is though. It's called the9.tv.
Yes.
TV being another web domain registry system.
Right.
And when you tune into that website, you'll see a graphic that looks like a simple two-dimensional triangle with nine smaller triangles within.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a holographic representation of a fractal patterning.
Yes.
Where infinity is contained within the fractal patterning. So nine is a self-contained sacred geometric configuration which opens itself up in this dimension,
mm-hmm.
to be able to assimilate and discern information.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It also historically in metaphysical circles represents the number of completion. Nine is the number of completion. It's also in the Tarot, it's the Hierophant or the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So that energy is here to be of service to assist individuals in gaining knowledge of themselves as they are related to the source. And the Latin for knowledge, or rather for education, is to draw forth from within. So their whole purpose is very respectfully allowing ourselves to create the space within ourselves to feel empowered to be who we truly are here.
Mm-hmm.
And that is their constant and consistent message. And my feeling is that people, their deep response to the work of the nine over especially the last 11 or 12 years has been because of that, because people are ready for that.
Well, the 60s certainly brought along, mm-hmm. the revolution, which,
yes.
was not televised, but instead was internalized through the baby boomer generation,
exactly.
Which we share.
Yes.
We were the largest contingent of massively born individuals to come along and not have as our priorities such things as survival,
mm-hmm.
or how to put food on the table. We had instead liberties,
mm-hmm.
that were never available to generations prior to us.
That's right.
So with those liberties came a new sense of freedom,
mm-hmm.
and a new sense of exploration.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, was the explosion of revolution that represented the 60s.
That's right. And it's interesting, and we were discussing this on the way over and prior to the show, the energy of the 60s was truncated in a sense. In other words, it did not, according to its true potential, really live itself out. And those things happen that way on this planet. And so now we're living in a time where those and similar energies are now beginning to express themselves, and the same kinds of things in a totally different way are beginning to happen here on this planet that got their seed of expression in the 60s. And this, where we are right now, this particular timing, is in resonance, harmonic resonance with what was happening in the 60s, and we're living in a higher octave of those times right now. It's just beginning. It's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, the maturation process of our generation, going from the adolescence of the 60s, now we've gone through a whole period of growing up and exploring and forgetting what we thought we knew, and now we're coming into a period of cronism, where we are starting to mature into who we really are.
Yes.
In the world of art, it was once said that you don't become a true unique artist until you're 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to let go of all the influences and all of the things that directed you up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And much of your work, interestingly enough, seems to help people come to that realization within themselves, to become the creative, singular artist that they might be.
That's right. That's right. You are the artist creator of your life, and you co-create that life. And that art that is your life, that masterpiece potentially, with other co-creators who are equal in whatever way to you as a creator. And all of the work addresses that at one level or another. Any of the things that psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually distract you from being in the ecstasy of the expression of your passion for being alive as a co-creator, as a fully empowered creative being, a God being is what we call it in the workshops. Those are the things that we address as blockages, and then we give techniques and processes for individuals to be able to dissolve or dissipate those blockages so that your life becomes you discovering and experiencing and expressing the much more of you right here, right now, every day. Mm-hmm. And it is innately a part of everyone's intention as a spirit being having a human experience to maximize their expression here. And that is the core of the expression. It's a joyous, unlimited God being inhabiting a physical body in the third and fourth and fifth dimension, bringing all of those energies together and being at play in the fields of the Lord, and you are one of the Lord's.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you've brought about several different workshops and seminars to attach to this.
Mm-hmm.
The one that you're just coming off of this last weekend was one that's called Havingness.
Yes,
Havingness. And it seems to be it seems dovetail with what you're saying. How would you describe Havingness as a seminar with what you were just talking about?
Well, Havingness brings together some concepts which people in their lives find to be very elusive. The sense of, you know, you can talk about manifesting, you can talk about processing, you can talk about mocking things up. What people have noticed that has escaped them is the sense of satisfaction in enjoying fully and completely and savoring their creations and having their creations be a part of their lives at much deeper levels. So this workshop addresses some of the blockages to the fullness of the state of havingness. And havingness encompasses several different interesting things. They are opulence, affluence, and abundance, all three together. They are savoring, satisfaction, and satiation, all three together. And if you're getting a feel for this, then you're moving into havingness. And havingness is a self-generated state that you both give and receive to all at the same time. And it, in explaining it, feels a little abstract, maybe, but the emotional response that we've received from people who, when they hear the phrase and then get an explanation of it, and then are in the energy of it, a certain kind of alchemical transformation begins to take place so that they redefine their experience for themselves as a co-creator and redefine their experience for themselves as being fully alive.
Mm.
It's a very exciting course. In fact, of all the courses, maybe it's because it's the newest one, or maybe it's because we are in the frequencies of the time, it has been the most joyous and exciting to deliver and to be a part of.
Well, I know on your website you shared the information from the Nine.
Mm-hmm.
There was a wonderful little letter that you sent to everybody, courtesy of the Nine.
Yes.
And you simply said, dear ones, this is written in love. Love is the underlying foundation of all things in the universe. And you go on to say how it connects us to the source. Mm-hmm. And then the nine wants to share about havingness. And we're certain that the subject is interest to all of you because of your struggles in the past and present with this state of being, like you're talking about. And you go on to say about true havingness begins with an understanding of who you are in relationship to the source and where you are in the creation. You are, in fact, an extension of the source, inseparable from it. You are, in truth, one with it and an integral part of it. The source needs you in order to complete itself. This seems to be the very core essence, the figure eight of the Mobius strip of being and existence, where we are and we are part of, and the source is part of us all at the same time.
That's right. Individual, indivisible. And in fact, the word individual actually comes from the root indivisible. In other words, when we are an individual expression of the source, we are the complete expression of the source. Only it's a singular expression of that source. Mm-hmm. And so this being, doingness, havingness that we are represents all of the qualities of the source potentially. Mm-hmm. And if we receive that about ourselves and acknowledge and surrender to this majesty that we are an irreplaceable aspect, extension of the all that is. And without each individual expression, the all that is would be incomplete. And for something which is completeness and wholeness, incompletion is impossible. So if we're experiencing non-havingness in the form of any sense of incompletion or disconnection or separation, we must be living in an illusion. And then it's exploring that illusion that has come about, and we'll talk further about some of the mechanisms that create this experience of being separate. In exploring that and releasing that, we come into this sense of it's an almost ineffable and undefinable and unspeakable state of acknowledgement, awareness, beingness, of being the extension of the source. I mean, what could be better? Mm-hmm. What could be better? And that experience exists for everyone. Only we're so entranced, let's say, by all of the phenomena, especially in the density of the third dimensional realm, that we never look inside for the source of our experience. And if we do that and see that we as co-creators are the source and the generators of our experience, and look past that, past our cosmic biological computer to the plug, we'll see that we're plugged into the source. Mm. And it's a wonderful experience.
It is indeed, and I think that's what's unfolding. That's so much of the information coming in is a definition and defining that, and your work itself seems to base itself around that, and I do want to explore that more and more throughout the time that we're going to do here.
Yeah.
Let's take a little breather on what we just talked about. Listen to a little bit of maybe a minute and a half or two of music just to let this sort of sink in. Take a breath, stretch. When we come back, we're going to talk about how the basis of the work called The Cherished Wound came about and how it helps us to unfold and peel back these layers to get to our havingness.
Very good.
We'll be back in just a moment.
Okay. Thank you.
That's called Pele's Heartbeat, Tony Salvage, an instrument virtuoso, violin virtuoso, living here on the Big Island. Tony's music also appears with a project that Jason's been involved in. It's something called Bliss Caps. And we'll get to the description of those a little bit later in the show. But once again, if you want to find out more about Jason's work, the9.tv is your beginning spot to look at the information that's out there on the web. And the Bliss Caps, blisscaps.com, is a way to tie into some of these new technological things that are augmenting the work that's coming in. We've been talking with Jason Starks here, a marvelous man who is gentle spirit, bringing in amazing information from the nether regions of ultra-dimensional realms. The Nine has been associated with him for 20 years almost. And the Nine, as we have identified them, is a source of intellectual energy that has been around for at least the last 40-odd years, influencing such people as Gene Roddenberry, who is the creator of Star Trek, and all of the spin-off things and altered states of reality that came out of the 60s that we can all identify with. The purpose of all of this is to get us back in touch with the source of who we are and how we are connected to that and how that is our common denominator. But the source is really asking us to do one thing and one thing only, and that is to be who we are in our totality, because that will be the completion of the source. And so Jason's work has been enabling us to get to that very aspect of ourselves. It started, in my knowledge, and I'm sure it started farther back than this, because you said some of the earlier workshops started as long as 18 years ago, and then there was a break, and then you came back in with the newer work, so to speak, which are the basis of the Cherished Wound. Was there a reason for it to come in two sections, and how did it evolve?
I think, and I've looked at this, you know, in wondering why and looking back, my feeling is that I needed to be able to have the time to integrate the energy and information within my own life, and also to get used to the idea of being a channel. I mean, in Hollywood, as a screenwriter, it's not something you run to your agent and just sort of start telling him about. Do you understand? So bringing in higher frequency energies at any level and for any purpose, it changes your vibration. And because your current life at that time is composed of all of your vibrations through the law of attraction, then when your vibration changes, everything in your life begins to change. And I know that a lot of people out there listening can relate to this now, because many people right now, because of what's happening with Venus and the other changes that are on the planet right now, your vibration is changing. And that causes, and they speak about it in the old text, a process of chemicalization or a stirring up. And that's because the core vibration has changed. So everything, according to the law of attraction and resonance, everything that wants to come in that is of a higher vibration needs space to do that, which means that things of a lower vibration in your life leave. And I went through several of these processes as I opened to more and more of the energy of the Nine and started the process of being a facilitator for that energy. And sometimes I just needed a rest. I needed to go back and recalibrate and recount the experience, because it's been, for me, a wonderful blessing in that it's a personal experience for me as well. Mm-hmm. When I first began the work, I was a trance channel. In other words, I would not totally lose consciousness, but my voice would change and my eyes would be closed, and I was bringing the energy and information through that way. And then about 9 years ago, which would be ironic, I got the message from the guides that I was to do it with eyes open and to be an example of the integration of a higher level of consciousness in a normal human being. And then that's when the actual work with the workshops and with other people started. I felt much more comfortable bringing through the energy that way and being able to relate to people as a person and not just as a bells and whistles kind of strange-looking conduit. And that, you know, helped my experience and allowed me to be much more present as well and to share with people on a human level as well as on the level of a facilitator or a channel.
I think the humanness of your presentations is what I really enjoy.
Yes.
You're very natural up there. Yes. You don't make any particular faces or go into any costuming that would pretend or portend that you're in another personality.
Yeah, I think it's just my personal vanity because I don't want to look strange. No, it is the celebration of the potential and the complexity of what we are as human beings. We are so much more than we think of ourselves as, all of us. Mm. So much more talented, so much stronger than we think that we are. We are multidimensional beings, and we are the example of that for the planet, those of us who are doing whatever work or joyous expression that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And this is all part of that process of awakening to that. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Yes.
We're assuming our own essential selves.
Yes.
And becoming the totality of who we are capable of being.
That's it.
So we are the artists. And, you know, whenever you think of art or the word inspiration always comes, what does an artist draw from? Some inspiration. Mm-hmm. Well, look at the word itself.
Yes.
In spirit.
That's it.
And action, the action of being in spirit.
That's right.
And you're bringing in whatever energies that are outside of yourself, integrating through your own source, mm-hmm. your own instrument, and then splaying it out in whatever way you're most comfortable doing.
That's right.
So as a writer and communicator, you obviously, words are your instruments, your tools for bringing this through. As a painter, you might have a canvas and palettes, or a sculptor, forms and shapes. Myself, I've always been a communicator in words, and it's always been a pleasure when I know that something's coming through me, and I don't try to claim it, but I can still recognize that I have my contribution.
Yes.
You said something important in one of the workshops about you should be at least 50% responsible for everything that's going on. And I thought, well, why not 100% responsible? Now, maybe you can elaborate on
that. Well, if you were 100% responsible, it would give everyone else nothing to do.
Exactly. So I thought that was a wonderful way of stating a co-creative relationship with the world around.
Yes, it is co-created. A lot of people, when they take on the idea of responsibility, go with 100%. And the nine call that totally insane responsibility. Because we are all equal co-creators here. And a couple of myths immediately get dispelled. One is that people are victims here. There are no victims here. There are co-creators who are having an experience in creating one, albeit unconsciously most likely, being directed by their soul and their higher self, that has a different meaning for them than it would for us. And this is not that you don't have compassion for people who are having these experiences at the human level. It means that you can understand why there are some of the experiences here and they are so insistently pursued as lessons for people. You know, do it until you get it right. If it hurts, stop it. And lots of people, not knowing that they are the co-creators, have lined up their lessons, and, you know, it's a kind of tough love on the part of the universe to keep giving them what they're unconsciously and in their sleep states asking for. And that's a way to look at everything that's happening here and to be in a place of understanding it and still be in your heart about it. That's a whole other workshop.
Well, the core essence that I recall from your work is something you call the cherished wound.
Yes.
Let's talk about what that represents and how that seems to be one of the essential blockages that many of us have come in or were programmed in that is preventing us from releasing ourselves into our creative self.
Okay. So long story short, and this is about the cherished wound. First of all, everyone has one. Secondly, they're in distinct categories, and everyone has borrowed from all of those categories to shape their own. And third, everyone thinks that they are their cherished wounded self, let's say. And the wound means the emotional and psychological and spiritual experience of the illusion of separation as an actual and real thing. So here you are this, you came from the all that is, you come into a very limited and limiting expression. You're in the matrix here. And in comparison to what you truly are as an unlimited being, you are wounded. There is something missing in you, and that's the other part of you. And because we form personality here as a way of getting along and communicating and being a part of the scene here, everyone takes on a certain series of ideas and decisions that add up to the experience of being wounded. And when you get a whole planet doing this, you get planet Earth, which is a wounded planet. And the wound is cherished because it's the first creation on the part of a creative being. And so getting people to release their wounds so that they can discover the allness that they are is sometimes big work. And it takes workshops to do that, mm-hmm. Play shops where people can hang out for 2 days and discover and discuss what's going on. And discover in the process of releasing the cherished wound their actual original, what we call their quantum self, their unlimited beingness beyond the cherished wound. And we've been giving the Cherished Wound workshop for, it was actually the first workshop we gave 11 or 12 years ago, mm-hmm. and we've given it all over the world. And people in Germany and in France have Cherished Wounds are the same as people in Hawaii and people in Costa Rica and Montana and New York and other places. They all have the same series of wound profiles. And once you come to understand that about yourself and free yourself of that, the healing into wholeness begins. And it changes your relationship, your day-in, day-out relationship with other God beings. You start seeing beyond their wound, their cherished wound, into their essence. And it's easier to get along here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like a lot of the work parallels what would have been taught in the mystery school.
Yes, it does, yeah.
Now, the mystery schools of old were relegated to people, the small amounts of people, mm-hmm. the initiates who had found their way into that path or who had been chosen by the elders and so on and so forth. But now, because the baby boomers came in with such force mm-hmm. and such numbers, mm-hmm. It's become available on a massive scale.
A massive scale and in many different forms.
Yes.
The essence of the tradition is there. The methodology of imparting the information is in many different forms. There are lots of wonderful things that are out there that people's souls will respond to as a thing to go and do and take, workshops, books, all of that are all part of what we call the mystery tradition. Mm-hmm. It's just updated to fit the times now.
Mm-hmm. It's upgrading your mm-hmm. vibrational frequencies to start to read the world differently.
Yes.
So if you can release the cherished wound, mm-hmm. what happens is, and it seems like one analogy would be that you've released the blinders
yes.
that has given you the narrow tunnel vision all of your life.
Yes.
Now, you have identified many of those blinders as things that are inherited from the family.
Yes.
Some people even identify them as things that they bring in from former lifetimes.
Yes. It's all.
And they have a shape. As you say, categorically, mm-hmm. you can pick out and say, okay, how many different categories were the cherished wound falling into? There were six.
Ironically, it's nine.
Okay. Ironically, yes.
Ironically and synchronistically, it's nine.
Yes, well, that would make sense.
And this brings to mind a wonderful quote that I heard from Wayne Dyer. And he says, when you change the way you look at a thing, the thing you're looking at changes.
It's quantum physics.
Yes. And when you change the way you look at your cherished wound, which is an overlay of yourself and other people's cherished wounds, just that level, that the action of observation starts a change, starts an unveiling of the essence of the person. Because you're looking past the wound into their essence expression or their God self and calling it forth. And when you do that for yourself, that's the beginning of your unshackling and your liberation. You become Neo. I get to be Morpheus for lots of folks. Right? Thinking of shaving my hair off.
Yes, and right. Those little glasses look really good on you.
Yes, right.
The leather coat. Oh,
the
boy.
Coat I could go for, yes.
Well, that's what happened culturally in the 60s.
Yes.
Not, we took a pill. We were the rabbit, white rabbits going down
yes.
the hole. The Beatles and the Doors and Country Joe and the Fish, the Beach Boys, they open up. The cherished wound.
Yes, exactly.
And we got a taste of what it was like to be on top of the mountain.
That's right, and to begin to be free of the wound.
Mm-hmm.
And
but we had to go back into the wound.
It's a process. It is a process. Because of where we are and what all of us are working on, and because of the importance of numbers, remember, this is a quantum process as well. So it's not just your awakening and my awakening. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all God beings here, and we came here together. And it's for all of us, and each and every one of us has a part to play in it. So that the more conscious units, let's say, that are available for the experience, the more complete the awakening will be. So in the 1800s, this process actually started in around 1860, 1870, somewhere around there. And then every 30 to 60 years, it's looped through. And you can look at the various outpourings of the teachers who came from the Orient and the East and so forth. That began in the middle to late 1800s, and then what happened in the 1900s and so forth. It's been a continual process, and it's like a wave. Do you know, it starts with a ripple, and then those waves, as they go out, create a much larger action. So now we're in at this point in the series of waves, and that's bringing us into 2012, where the process will complete itself. And this is an extraordinarily exciting and sometimes terrifying time to be alive. And it's why all of us chose to come and be here at this particular time, why some of us had the experiences of the 60s so that we could recognize these experiences. So we have some background as to the essence of what it means. It's just an extraordinary time.
Well, I'm glad to be around for it.
Yeah.
And looking forward to what's going to be unfolding. Of course, there's been a lot of talk about the upcoming Venus transit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an astronomical event where Venus will be passing in front of the face of the sun, in effect eclipsing the sun between the Earth and the sun. Now, this last time it happened was 122 years ago, and it happens every 122 years. If you look at some of the cultural dynamics, you mentioned the mid-1800s, 1870s.
Right.
This was 1876 through, or 1874 through 1882,
right.
The last time it came around. I know from the standpoint of artistic sensibility,
yes,
something called pointillism and impressionism was born,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
was from a visionary standpoint, was a new way of looking at reality,
right? Exactly.
And that affected the way science actually started to deal with reality. If artists can look at a picture of a church and see it as a bunch of points of light,
mm-hmm.
perhaps the matte photograph description of reality needs to be altered as well.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, there's an atomic structure
yes.
that science can start to pin on. This is what happened at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Now that technology has enabled us to see into the micro and into the macro,
mm-hmm.
we're looking at different ways of expanding our awareness. And a lot of people are pointing at this time as
mm-hmm.
being, okay, now we're stepping into another way of quantum expansion.
This is it.
Which is not technological, because we already have the technology, we have the internet, we have the telephones,
mm-hmm.
something internal is happening.
Yes.
And
in this sense, instead of manipulating electrons and that sort of thing, it is consciousness that is the new technology.
Mm-hmm.
It is consciousness that is the new technology. And the interface of consciousness and matter at a wholly different level has quantumed itself in that 120 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to, and is creating, and expansion on all levels. It is consciousness, spirit, meeting matter and transforming matter into a whole different and new expression.
And the way we define that now mm-hmm. is the nature of information.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the revolution, a revolutionary period where information, the knowledge, the amount of information is doubling or actually arithmetically increasing
mm-hmm.
like the computer industry.
That's it.
We can no longer contain it within our bio-computer linear thinking systems. We have to let go. And part of that letting go is letting go of the old restricted mores and belief systems that have held us into the cherished wound.
That's it.
So you're popping the bubble. You're letting go, letting it out, exploding our ability to accept the amount of information that's all around us.
Mm-hmm.
So the cherished wound is really the new tool that we need in order to accommodate this big shift.
That's it. And I want as many people on the planet to have this information, which is my new and most recent commitment as of the last year or so. Having given the workshop and being in joy about that as something to do and being a facilitator and so forth, the more I looked at it and the more I got feedback from people, and then the more I looked at the world, I actually had, you know, another epiphany about 2 years ago when I looked at the world and in trying to describe the insanity of what I thought was insanity of what was happening in the world, I thought, the world is a cherished wound workshop. And the whole globe is wearing and acting out its cherished wound.
Hmm.
And all of the politicians are doing this, and the economists, and the religious leaders, they're all coming from that first infantile state of miscreation. And it's putting the world at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Just as being in your cherished wound puts you at risk of not being able to enjoy your life, or even having a life that's your own.
Mm-hmm.
And in that realization came this new commitment to let Spirit work through me to get the word out about the concept of the cherished wound and all of the other concepts that are embodied in the work, to get those out to as many people on the planet as possible.
And you do this. You go throughout the world. You mentioned France and Germany.
Yes.
And this is, but Hawaii has been your home.
Yes.
For the most part of the last 5 years.
Thankfully.
Yes. What do you think Hawaii has to offer, or what has it got to offer to you? Why were you, like, I felt the calling to come to Hawaii.
Right.
You felt it. Others who have been drawn here, there's something about Hawaii that really separates it. And maybe some people have described it as having different magnetics. It has different wave frequencies here. It has different abilities to merge into higher consciousness or accept the other worlds of spirit and the elementals. What do you think it is?
It's all of those things, and it's more. It is a center of healing to begin with. And healing in many different ways and forms. Spiritual and emotional healing. Physical healing. You can, I'm sure, talk with acupuncturists and hands-on healers and so forth. Their work, I would imagine, is accelerated here. People come here to take their vacations. Those are actually healing journeys. The history of the islands, as it's recalled in its purest expression, this island in particular, was a place where people came to take the spiritual waters of healing. And as the energies increase in their intensity and raise in their frequency, this and other spots, especially this, are kind of way stations. It is an oasis for the healers to heal themselves and to come and take the healing. It's also a place, because of where it is with 19.5 and so forth, it's a place where novel and new expressions, especially of a healing nature, are given birth. It's also Deep Space Nine, where individuals of various levels of consciousness and different spiritual experiences can come and gather. Deep Space Nine is also Gene Roddenberry, by the way.
Yes, it is a spinoff of the Star Trek, and here we are back at Nine, and Nine coming through. Well, there must be an aspect of Nine to the Hawaiian aspect here on the Big Island.
Yes.
One of the things, and this is a term that we've heard time and again associated with the Big Island because of the presence of Madame Pele, this is a monument to the divine feminine principle, the goddess energies that have now started to reactivate themselves and are very much a part of this drama of unfolding and rebalancing and healing of the planet.
That's right. That's right. And we're coming to an end. We are at the end of a patriarchal period on the planet. Now, it's interesting. If you look at the cycles and study the work of McKenna and people like that who have documented these various cycles, the masculine principle or patriarchal energy runs for a shorter period of time. And its energies are creative act as partially destructive, to destroy, to create. And its power as power over in its distortion. The planet is basically, as if it's a being, a feminine being. And the feminine periods, if you look at the history of the goddess running things, go on for a longer period of time. So we're at the end of a period of the masculine expression, and it's folding back into the reemergence of the feminine. And those energies and what they represent and how they operate. And this has nothing to do with sexual gender. It is gender in the sense of how energy in a polarity breaks itself up and complements its aspects to each other. Mm-hmm. We are in the rise of the feminine energy with all of those qualities. And that would mean intuition and nurturing and space. The masculine energy is time. The feminine energy is space. So we're moving into a space of nurturing and giving birth to a whole new expression for humanity and for spiritual consciousness expressed through humanity. And with the coming of the Venus transit at the end of the Mars, which was like the last hurrah for the old patriarchal energy, those structures you'll see are already beginning to dissolve. And these new structures of the feminine are moving into place. And it's interesting. In the 1800s, around 1870, the same issues, then they were spoken about in occult circles of women's freedom, of free energy, of unlimited artistic expression, of sexual expression freely expressed, of philosophy in a non-religious context. Those were the things that people were thinking about as a precursor to this time. And we're in resonance with those times now. And power, there was a discussion around electricity, a great battle, and I'm sure you know about this, about alternating current as opposed to direct current and Westinghouse and Tesla and all of that. We are living in the aftermath of those times. And in, during that time we chose oil, there were other choices that were available to us. Those choices that were available that were not adopted and chosen were primarily feminine and more mysterious and widespread and free in terms of the space that they take up and inhabit than what we chose.
And from the rational standpoint, they look like chaotic,
yes,
as opposed to controllable.
That's right.
And so therefore, the more controllable aspects of a manageable energy source, such as oil or coal, which was what, and alternating current versus direct current.
Right.
These are all kinds of aspects that we're coming back to understand, not only metaphysically, but in a physical context as well.
It's
part of the new changing terrain. Well, we're expanding ourselves into the consciousness of the planet Gaia. And a lot of this conversation now is taking us into these big, broad strokes. And it's really good because this is all part of the process that we're involved in.
Mm-hmm.
But before we go into depth into some of these, let's take another little breather here. Listen to some music of Michael Hammer's Pleiades and get us expanded out into the spaciousness of where we're going to be in this next half hour. So we'll be back in just a moment. Okay, that was a little sojourn into the far reaches of the Pleiadian Gateways. Compliments of another Dolphinville regular, Michael Hammer. He was on the show a couple of weeks ago. And his music is available on Dolphinville Gift Store, as is the Bliss Caps, which is a series of really beautiful programs. They're about 10 to 12 minutes long. They were conceived by Jason's beautiful mind and with the assistance of the Nine and a wonderful crew of technicians.
Yes,
the photography of Lisa Denny and Kaivi Stevens and
Jerry Williams, Jenna Starks.
Lots of people
Patty
bringing
Rona.
Their talents together. And the Bliss Caps enable you to literally put something on your computer top or on your DVD player at home, let go of everything, and just get lost in 10 or 12 minutes of infinity.
Yes.
Some of them have to deal with dolphins and whales, and that would be a subject that I would like to just briefly touch on. Now, I know that you came to Hawaii almost over 10 years ago now, and I've seen you out on the boats. And I know that you know Joan, and you know so many people here in the dolphin community who swim with the dolphins and whales. They've gotten so much information from them.
Yes.
Let me ask you, what information have the dolphins and whales provided for you?
A lot of it is in resonance with the things that the Nine discuss. And when you open the show in talking about the cetaceans and their contribution to our consciousness, potentially, if we're open to receive it, a little backstory. My commitment to come and be here and to actually live here started with listening to Spirit and getting to know Joan Ocean and being inspired to do her story as a film. So, and then getting her permission, and then that led me to, doing research, which is going out in the water with the dolphins and so forth. Now, I'm not a strong swimmer. In fact, I was at that time water phobic. So it was a big journey for me to undertake that. And with Joan's help and Patty, my partner, and Lisa and all of these folks and you, I did wetsuit and got in the water and so forth. And that added so much dimension and depth to the experience of considering the material and beginning to shape it into a screenplay, which will eventually be a movie. And it will be called, hopefully, Angels of the Deep. That's the title that we're working with. Also, in doing that research, I got to meet John Lilly. Joan introduced me to him. And it was through him and reading some of his work that I got the more scientific side of in understanding of the impact of the cetacean consciousness, and then experiencing his energy and Jones and yours and the other swimmers. There is an obvious multidimensionality and a sense of heightened empathy, let's say, that it borders on telepathic, that stems from the experience of the cetaceans. And then this sense of also unconditionality as a living experience. That's what I experience when I'm with them and observe others with them in the water. And an extraordinarily keen, joyous intelligence and a connectedness. And you familiar with the work of Dan Winter?
Yes.
Okay. So he's taken off on the cetacean consciousness and talked about the Nine as well. And has come through with some interesting things from Egypt. And it was, according to him, stated that the cetaceans, actually, their songs and their speech that we hear as the clicks and the sounds, their frequency actually was placed here by them as a protective overlay after the planet tilted and we began to receive the radiation from the sun and all of that stuff in a different way. And without that protective membrane, life on this planet would be much more chaotic and less thriving. And they are revered in many cultures for their contribution to that. So they represent synergy, they represent harmony, and they are the embodiment of that. I mean, to actually see their bodies do what is scientifically impossible, so effortlessly and joyously, and then to be in their presence. And to feel their energy and feel so welcomed and invited by them and enfolded into their consciousness, and to feel the shift of being in their frequency in one's own consciousness. It's just been, maybe that's why I stayed so long.
Well, you mentioned yesterday when we were talking briefly, you said there's the mystery school of the cetaceans.
Right, exactly.
And I hadn't heard it quite put that way before, but I think it's true. John Lilly, certainly the father of contemporary thought relating humans and cetaceans together. Also, his information came in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
along with the nine. There is something very distinctly feminine about the dolphin experience.
Yes.
Also in the 60s, there was a famous book called Stranger in a Strange Land,
yes.
which talked about water brothers.
Yes.
And talked about telepathy or telempathy connecting people with a higher mm-hmm. realm of being. Now that became, you know, that was one of the famous books back then. It was kind of a cult favorite. Everybody was reading it and feeling the sensations of what it was like to have a group mind relative to the way it was described in that book.
Yes.
And anybody who hasn't heard of that book or hasn't read it, I would strongly recommend. Robert Heinlein is a great, great master writer, and that is his masterpiece. It's been released several times. In fact, there was one, the full annotated, unexpurgated edition that came out about 10 years ago, because the original thing had been edited, about 1,000 pages were chopped out of it. So
mm-hmm.
the original is out there. And it talks simply about a man who was brought up by Martians
mm-hmm.
and then comes back to Earth with a greatly enhanced ability as a human
mm-hmm.
because he was brought up by beings who allowed him to express himself in his totality as a human.
Okay.
Unfortunately, when he came back to the Earth, everybody was still being in their cherished wounds.
Exactly.
So what was it like to be in a stranger in a strange land? And that's the nature of the book. How it unfolds, it's fascinating, and there's many, many levels of awareness that we can tie into even now. Thinking about water consciousness, thinking about how water and the dolphins relate to us, and how it's a way of thinking about what the way things are unfolding for us.
That
the waterness, the liquidness.
I must say this. I'm having a mini epiphany. And I'm looking back. You asked the story of how I came to do this and the screenwriting and so forth. And this just comes to mind. This is not name dropping. One of the famous authors that I got to meet as a young screenwriter was Robert Heinlein, who was one of the people that encouraged me to continue to pursue my... So I'm just really wondering about how much of influence the nine have in my day-in and day-out existence, and I wouldn't be surprised. That is amazing, and I hadn't remembered that until now. Thank you.
Well, I don't know why I brought that in, but it just sort of popped into my mind. So
yeah.
As we mentioned on the break, the nine are right in the midst of us here.
Yeah.
They're having their way with us. And
now,
okay.
Leonard Nimoy, I don't know. Okay.
Well, the work, the cherished wound that we talked about, it releases something within us.
Yes.
And then what happens is a series of unlocking chambers, modules.
Modules
one thing
is good.
Starts to unlock the other thing.
Right.
And in succession, as you've unfolded these workshops, one of the things that you help people to come to grips with after they've
mm-hmm.
released the cherished wound
mm-hmm.
is what is something called living in the gap. And you identify and release the cherished wound, your life becomes different.
Yes.
And there's a feeling that is accompanied with it, but often that feeling of free-falling
free-fall.
Is associated with a bit of disorientation.
Right.
So living in the gap, and actually you quoted Deepak Chopra as saying that the gap is the most powerful and fertile place that the creator can be in.
Exactly.
And I think it's something I identify with when I was in art school, and there would be that moment when you're facing the blank canvas,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, oh my God, what do I do? Oh, it's so intimidating, and it's just blank, and there's nothing there, and making that first stroke is some of the most difficult thing. But once you do it and commit yourself, it starts to go. That, to me, is the gap.
Yes.
But that's the creative juice, the soup of which we're dipping into.
Yes, another way of saying it that would be convenient for people as a way to understand it is you've left an old paradigm, and as soon as you encounter a new paradigm, there is a gap. The gap is the unknown. And the unknown means that all potential for any expression exists there. And it's leaping into the void. And it's your own life, you know, and it may not seem that extraordinary or extravagant, and to you it is, and that's how it feels to you. So in doing the follow-up work in the progression from the cherished wound all the way to the master self or personal mastery, we teach people how to handle this newfound freedom and absolute uncertainty of being in the gap, of having left the limitation of the cherished wound and everything that was so familiar and being familiar, comfortable to the ego, and how to embrace this new space that is totally undefined and to become all of the definitions within that space consciously, to actually use the gap as a resource for joy and for creativity instead of what it's usually used for, which is for the ego to freak out and totally go into red zone and try to get back into your cherished rune identity, which doesn't work.
Well, it helps if an atmosphere is provided, a new bohemia, so that you're free to express and you're not being slammed down for having some of these open thoughts.
Yes.
And it naturally it dovetails into the next progression, next modular of information that you're sharing with people, which you call the mastery of manifesting.
Yes, right. So now you've, in these workshops, we say that your cherished wound is your first creation. Then you go into a gap and you consider a creation and gather your resources. And I must point out that all of this work works directly with the emotional body. And the emotional body in most spirit work is totally shunted aside. And it's not that we beat pillows or anything. We use the energy and we respect all of what you have going on emotionally as part of the wholeness of your being and as part of how you validate your experience. And when it's honored and respected and witnessed, then that frees you up to create with much more energy and much more joy. If you're sitting on your anger, you can't express your joy. So there are very elegant ways that denying energy and people's higher selves and their guidance work with freeing the emotional body of crystallized traumas that are stuck in their energy field, of pictures, of events, of lineage patterns that they have inherited that are on their hard drive. And so with the emotional body, we get to clear the hard drive of all of those masses, as some other teachings would say, which frees all of that energy up so that then you can focus on your manifesting and be totally present emotionally, energetically, because emotion means energy in motion. And using your feelings as a guide, not judging any of your feelings, but just using your feelings as feedback as to whether or not you're feeling close to the source and in harmony or balance or not. We teach people the mechanics of manifesting. And it can look like magic from the outside, and it's a science that every baby knows and is forgotten by the time they're three.
Well, I know that in the cherished wound workshop, you identified that the cherished wound is brought in infancy.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're a small child, and by the time we're seven or eight, it's firmly in place.
Exactly.
And it's being operated on. Now, in this manifesting, the mastery of manifesting, you identify one of the major blocks as called the tantrum.
Yes.
And that tantrum is something that you also identify with coming in the adolescent stages or the later adolescent stages, the teenage years, which is when we come into our sexual potency and in our mental potency.
Yes.
And that's where a lot of stuff has been mixed up.
Yes.
And, of course, you mentioned that's when we're drafted in the military as teenagers. And
you know, between the ages of, say, 15 and 22 to 25, a spirit being in a physical body form is at their peak. All of their hormones, all of their systems are at maximum expression. It's different for men and women than it is for women, and it's generally used that bracket. So you're online as a fully functioning, empowered spirit being in a highly effective physical body form that's your avenue of expression. And all of that juice that you're getting from source and from nature and all of the billions of processes that are going on makes you a powerhouse. And what generally happens because of the reactive nature of the mind in a conditioned setting or society is that you use that energy and that willfulness, all of that willfulness, against yourself and against your own best interest by throwing a tantrum from having been wounded. And it's the second level of let go. And, you know, in that state, and we can recover, we've discovered, we can recover through regeneration, emotionally and physically, all of those energies that begin to presence themselves at that age once we get past the tantrum.
And the tantrum itself is a false identification with power.
That's it. It's a misuse or a miscreation, misunderstanding of power.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where we are, especially in Western society and in many other cultures in the world, this whole idea of rites of passage and the elders passing things along, all of that is basically no longer in existence. So people are not shown, especially in this society, how to, you know, leave one period and enter a next and actually honor it, what to expect, you know, what they're working with, what to celebrate, basically, you know, what's coming online. So it's you know, everyone gets mugged by their process because no one speaks about it. And this causes a great deal of disturbance and dissatisfaction and trepidation and just basically the bummers of the world with people being in their tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, world wars are basically wounded people who are now empowered to have a tantrum and hurt each other.
Mm-hmm.
And this addresses that, and the tantrum is undone, and it happens in 2 days. Actually, the process starts in those 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
We work with the emotions, and we validate the right to have the tantrum and then point out, as compared to what else you can create, you can let it go now.
Mm-hmm. Now that you can redirect that energy,
right,
then real manifestation can start to take place.
That's right. Real manifestation that matches the desires of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've found in this work as a person is that all of the people that I've met, regardless of how they have appeared, are essentially deeply sweet. And people only want to have an impact and to share. And people have an urge to merge, and they pretend that they don't, and that's condoned and by society, so that people don't come together, and their impulse is to come together.
Mm-hmm.
Unity is a part of our cellular nature, that impulse.
Well, you have to have a clear intention before manifestation can
yes.
even begin.
Yes.
And so clearing out the decks, getting rid mm-hmm. of the blockages, the cherished wounds, and mm-hmm. the tantrums that we're throwing up as blocks to our own
mm-hmm.
own clarity,
mm-hmm.
these are very important aspects.
Right.
And, of course, it represents a real threat to the powers that be.
Yes.
If people are in their power.
Yes.
And they, you know, they're not paying their taxes. They're not going to war. They're not
right.
being good soldiers.
They're not doing the things that are inherently against their nature that feed and benefit those individuals who are collectors of power, as opposed to the masses who are interested in self-empowerment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're through this a series of strong suggestions and encouragement, you are discouraged from knowing yourself as a God being, discouraged from seeking self-empowerment, discouraged from being creative as opposed to being reactive, discouraged from being creative as opposed to being competitive, which is reactive. And there are as part of this game, just think of the movie The Matrix, there are individuals or structures, let's say, that seem to derive a benefit from group disempowerment. If you're looking for the answers and you're told that they're outside yourself, you'll just keep looking and never look for the answers where they actually reside, and that's inside.
Mm-hmm. That also starts to dissolve the power structure itself.
Yes, it does.
We talked about how the power structure is formed much the way a pyramid looks.
Yes.
And it may well be the representation, the symbol of the pyramid, way back when, mm-hmm. was a way to entrain people as to the way reality is supposed to look to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there's a pharaoh sitting on the capstone, mm-hmm. and all the other little subsequent subjects are holding it, and if you're on the bottom row, so what? If you're being crushed by the weight of everything above, you're serving your purpose, and you're part of that reality matrix.
Right, exactly.
And that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that isn't the way it is anymore. We're letting go of the pyramid structure, and we talked about this yesterday, and we're starting to enliven the sphere of consciousness.
And it was so beautiful when that came through for
yeah.
you. It's such a beautiful description of what's happening. And, you know, that sphere is the space that is essentially this feminine.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We'll just look at its structure.
Yeah.
Angular versus curvilinear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those are two aspects that are a part of our being.
Yes.
We all, or most of us, have heard and visualized what the Merkabah looks like.
Yes.
It is a star tetrahedron contained within a sphere.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least as a star tetrahedron is in its spinning state, it creates the illusion of a sphere around it.
Yes. Exactly.
But this is a little bit different. We talked about it yesterday as the sphere actually encompassing the pyramid.
Yes, it does.
And now we have a different way of looking at reality. This is a mystical symbol too.
Yes, it
triangle
is.
Inside the circle.
That's it. And it is over unity or the wholeness. You know, the sphere represents the space, and it also represents the mystery. It represents, in science, it's called the shadow side of science.
Mm-hmm.
That which is unexplored because it is so vast and represents a physical expression of the infinite. It's a form that, I mean, if you think of a circle or a sphere, mm-hmm. that's how our mind can, in one way, in a form, relate to the infinite. And of the two, the masculine and the feminine is in its expression closer to the infinite in that sense.
And what are some of the techniques that you share with people to help them in this manifestation process?
Basically, observation, how to be in a place of humor, loving humor, and what to observe. And the distinction of heartful observation as opposed to judgment and shame and blame and guilt and all of those things that go with making comparisons and making judgments and having the ego, which has no capacity to understand the wholeness, having that in charge of trying to understand something that it can't and seeking and not finding. We point these out as methods that don't work, methods that were taught to you by the sleepers before you, and you as a being who is awakening, how to drop those, and then with the eyes of your heart, basically, combined with your third eye and all of the rest of you, how to actually observe and then influence in your observation what's going on in your reality. How to be a good chooser is basically what all of the workshops are about, because the nine say this over and over again, and others say this. We live in a universe that answers your questions. What we get people to do is ask different questions, and those questions change their experience.
Right on.
Yes.
Well, this kind of dovetails to the next module of information that comes through, which you call the gift of forgiveness.
Yes.
So after you've manifested the gift of forgiveness, really, This is a way of being, is it?
Yeah, it's a gift to accept the technology or knowledge of forgiveness and to understand its parts. And you become a gift when you're in the state of being that place or that point of forgiveness. Hmm. And one of the things we point out, and we mention it every workshop over and over again, and whenever we refer to forgiveness requires energy. It requires energy to forgive. And if your energy is tied up in suppressing your emotions around what it is that you're forgiving, you won't have the energy to forgive. If you're a nice person and you just say, I forgive you, it won't happen. You have to connect with the incidents and so forth in your emotional body, release those, and then convert that energy into the energy of wholeness and connectedness called forgiveness.
And that's part of the creative process as well.
Yes.
I mean, you want to manifest.
Yes.
You want to get clear with your intention of how the manifestation will take place.
Yes.
You let go of those things we're blocking. You reach out so that joy can become part of your life, which is the gift of forgiveness.
That's it.
That's amazing the way that all kind of links together, which then leads us to one of the most important aspects of this whole process. Once you are in a state of wholeness, or you're beginning to see yourself as a creative entity, how do you hook it up with something else? Another individual is the place to start.
Yes.
So intimacy is the next level of enfoldment for you.
Yes, and that's deep fun. And it's been said that intimacy is into me see. And I just love that, because that describes what that process is, or what the word means. And we're dealing, of course, with relationships. And it's the key to the intimacy workshop is your relationship with yourself, and then others is self out there. So according to the laws of the subconscious mind and the way that it works, it makes no distinction between you over there at you and me over here at me. It thinks we're the same thing. So if I say something about you or to you, I'm actually saying it to myself according to my subconscious mind. And the superconscious, which is above the personal, operates in the same way that the subconscious does. Hmm. And so if I am in an illusion of separation from myself and who I truly am, that'll produce that same illusion with self out there or with others, and I'll have trouble with intimacy. And when I can enjoy the process, in the experience rather, of totally accepting and allowing myself to be, and into me see God, then that seeing God in me produces intimacy in my connection with you or with anyone else, or with Dice the dog who comes and visits.
And this is really an important part of the process. Because it's one thing to be a hermit living in a cave.
Yes.
And you've gone through all of these great processes that have alleviated yourself, or you're painting these wonderful things on the cave walls. But to begin to apply these principles to the outside world begins with your relationship to one other person.
Yes.
The whole universe is defined by relationships.
Yes, that's it.
One thing to another.
That's it.
And this naturally leads to the next module of your teachings, which is the empowerment. The new matrix of empowerment, as you call it.
Yes.
So once you've resolved these things, you're beginning to apply it, you see the sacred partnership of intimacy, and then the new matrix begins to unfold.
Yes.
What a wonderful concept.
That's it. And the new matrix as a you know, the new paradigm is so exciting. And people are so ready for it. David Bohm used to say that it's the unfoldment of the underlying implicate order.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, when we got here, what we're experiencing now as the new thing was here when we got here. It's just that our awareness and our experience with our awareness has allowed us to begin to allow that to express itself through ourselves and on the planet.
Mm.
And that's the new matrix.
You have several things over 2 years that you, two days that you cover in that.
Yes.
And you have them listed here on the website. I'll just read them very briefly. There are 8 points.
Mm.
One, release from the old dark star energies of futility, abandonment, fear, and betrayal. Two, activate dormant centers of light. Three, open to and accept higher frequency soul encoding. Four, examine purpose and destiny. Five, undergo a DNA activation. This is a big one. We've heard it used. Six, healing of subtle bodies. Seven, establish contact with realm masters and light beings, holding the grid to the new matrix in place. And finally, rearrange all agreements and work with elementals and forces of evolution.
Yes.
Now, this is a wide spectrum of stuff.
Yes, it is.
This is the new matrix, though.
It's the new matrix, yes.
All of these elements that we've heard about, DNA activation, how do we get in touch with our spirit guides, how do we start to associate with the spiritual elements, the elementals, the nature spirits, how about the extraterrestrials, the ultra-terrestrials that are all occupying this space with us?
Yes.
These are all part of this particular work module that you're offering.
Yes, yes. The illusion that we are alone is such a huge con. And the evidence to the contrary is so pervasive and so ignored, it is stunning. And being, you know, expanding your awareness to include what else is here is a never-ending process. And, you know, signing up for the new matrix by acknowledging that that's where you want to be and where you are begins this process of joyous, almost childlike discovery. And it ends forever, this idea that you're alone. Because mm-hmm. that's an impossible idea.
The other thing, too, that occurred to me when you first introduced this work, and this was a couple of years ago, was that, well, 2000 was the big line in the sand. We mm-hmm. were all waiting for some big cataclysmic thing to happen. Mm-hmm. All the computers would shut down mm-hmm. and everything would end or a new world would begin. When, in fact, what did happen was very, very subtle in nature.
Yes.
But something did very distinctly happen. We shifted into a new way of being, a new way of thinking, and the feminine energies took a new foothold mm-hmm. on reality.
Yes.
In other words, the new matrix began mm-hmm. right under our noses.
That's right, at the millennium.
And so you're asking people not to wait for the line in the sand or mm-hmm. the big gong to go off or mm-hmm. the starter's gun to shoot.
Right.
To start acting as if it has already happened, because it has happened.
It
has already been happening. And now it's to start to act as if it's, you know, you're part of the contributing energies to continue to allow it to happen.
That's it. And it's gathering momentum and be a part of that momentum.
I loved your analogy, too, about the Tinkerbell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more that you believe in Tinkerbell, mm-hmm. the brighter she becomes.
Right.
So the new matrix, the way I conceived it in my vision, was a lattice work of light that illuminated the sphere of the planet consciousness.
That is very good. That yeah. is very good.
And
it's along the lines of light.
Yeah, it is.
That all of these things are occurring.
And it's about being light and being of the light and keeping it light at the same time.
Yes.
Which, and the new matrix kind of opens up naturally to the next phase of the modules that you offer people, mm-hmm. which is opening to channel.
Yes.
People want to know what this is about. Is can I be a channel? Oh, boy, what is that like? Well, we're all capable of being channels.
Mm-hmm.
We are all naturally spiritual beings having a physical experience.
Yes.
And so this particular module, opening a channel, helps people get in touch with what it's like to do what you're doing with the nine.
Yes. And basically, it's really simple. It's creating a relationship versus establishing the reality, not just the possibility. Because people channel stuff all the time. People channel bad jokes. People channel their uncles and aunts and their relatives. So channeling is simply being a conduit for information other than your own, per se, personal information and energy.
Inspiration.
And it's doing it consciously and with permission of self and the other energies involved. So that indicates or implies a relationship. So the workshop or the course is really about redefining and becoming aware of the relationship with the guidance you already have, and if there are other guiding energy entities that you would like to have as part of that relationship, opening ways and establishing agreements with them so that they work for you.
That's an important one.
Yes.
It also helps us realize that we're not alone.
We're not alone.
And that is part of healing the cherished wound.
That's it.
So it's, again, all connected, interrelated to everything else that's been progressively unfolding for people.
Right.
And, you know, it seems as if you actually, knew what you were doing when you put this together.
I had no clue.
The nine did a good job, though, of feeding you the information.
They fed me the information. I write it down on 3x5 cards. I still have the original cards for every workshop. And many of them have not changed over 12 years.
Well, that
now, the energy has changed in that it is much more highly refined, and the energy of the participants has changed in that that's much more highly refined. And that goes to the things that Greg Braden and other people have noticed, is that the frequency of the planet has changed. And people who used to spend, you know, a good part of the 2 days or the 5 days or the 6 days being in their story and being in density, that doesn't happen so much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's people are collapsing these issues and blockages and so forth so much faster. And that's because their energy, the energy they have to work with and what they're open to, is of a much higher and finer frequency. And it's just, it's a joy to be a part of it and to watch this.
Somebody noted that it's like a germination process that's going on.
Yes.
And as the people who were the pioneers or the trailblazers,
mm-hmm.
who were starting to forge these new ways of being,
mm-hmm.
are actually making it, you know, we don't have to go back and reinvent the wheel.
Right.
We don't have to whack down all of that growth because the ways have been cleared.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening is consciousness itself is expanding geometrically.
Yes.
The illusion of time is speeding up because consciousness itself is speeding
up. Yes.
Yeah. And so this is all part of this process that we're all involved in.
Yeah.
And it's all part of a great, great unfolding, the great shift, as it's been called, so on and so forth. We all have different labels,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
the same thing that's happening. And it's leading us to an area of the next module, which you call personal mastery.
Oh, that is the creme de la creme. That is the course. And that is over a period of 6 days. It's in a natural setting that enhances the process of being in touch with that quantum master self within. And the two that we gave were in Costa Rica, and we had people who spoke five different languages, people from different parts of the world. 40 plus people come together for 6 days of being in the energy of discovering their master expression and self. And each one completes that contract and connection. And it's just an incredible experience. It's so joyous and, you know, fun and powerful. And those innate abilities that can come to the surface when they're allowed with the support of a group and in a setting like that are phenomenal. And who people turn out to be as opposed to who they thought they were is just amazing. And it presences itself as soon as they start to sign up for the course, and then continues all the way through the course. And people have kept in touch over the years with what their experiences have been and how they are impacting their world, because that's one of the intentions, is to receive yourself as a master, mm-hmm. and then let that master aspect of yourself working through spirit help you define the creation of your life from that point on. So you embrace your destiny and your purpose for being here. And then that unfolds and evolves rapidly as soon as you take this course. And it's an amazing course.
Well, Costa Rica, third world country, but yet right in the midst of ancient Incan and Aztecian empires, Toltecs. I mean, and there's a really a wonderful attitude. Every people I know who have been there, who have lived there,
yes.
there's a freeing attitude, much like Bali has a spirituality as part of the essence of the country.
Yes.
It seems like Costa Rica is kind of like the Central American Bali.
Yes, and so that brings me to something that's just come up. We're planning another personal mastery in October of this year. And so we're putting the word out because we won't do it most likely in the place that we were giving it in Costa Rica. We are open to another place. Maybe it'll be Bali or Tahiti or wherever. But some place where people can have this extraordinarily freeing experience in an environment that supports that kind of expansion,
mm-hmm.
endowed with the frequencies and the energies of nature, because that's part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
So just put that out there. I don't remember the exact dates. It's the first part of October.
Mm-hmm.
Expect to be joined by 60 or maybe even 70 other individuals on the same path, and show up as your master self at the end of 6 days. It's an incredible process.
It sounds like it. And
yes.
choosing a place
yes.
will be part of a process
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, that's all part of the process, too, because it all works together.
Hmm.
And Costa Rica was just fantastic. And for that time, going into the millennium and so forth, it was the perfect place.
Hmm.
And we did it in a place called Samosati, which is up a mountain on top of a field of crystals, one of the largest deposits in Central, you know, and overlooking the ocean, and the dolphins were there, and the jungle is there.
Gee, so what's wrong with that place? Sounds like it would be worth going back to.
Yeah.
Well, this takes us to almost a mini full circle here.
Yes.
We started out with having this, because this is the most recent work, but before you step into having this, you have a module that you call spiritual sensuality.
Yes.
Describe what that's about.
Okay, that in the past and still is a 5-day course which concentrates on spirit through your physical vehicle in all of its expressions, creative life force, let's say, and how it is perceived and expressed and experienced through your 5 and 6 and 7 senses. So it's experiencing yourself as a spirit being having a human experience in the most exalted kind of way. Mm-hmm. It then becomes a sensual expression, meaning involving the senses and at the same time involving also all of your aliveness, all of your joy, all of the impulse to freedom of expression, and all of those. It undoes the taboos about being in a body. And then part of it is your sexual expression, which is touched on in the course over that 5 days, and also an intimacy with the physical expression to the level of the cellular, to the cellular level, so that all of the joy that you are as a connection to source, your body at the in what's covered in the course has an opportunity to reach its full potential as a sensual vehicle and mechanism, let's say. And it's kind of redefining your experience as a physical, spiritual being in the world, and having a deeper appreciation of all that supports your experience and the reason for your experience. And people forget this, and the ancient texts talk about this, that we are created in the image of what they call God. And that means that we have this opportunity to spiritualize matter. And the matter that we are closest to and what matters most to us as spirit beings in a body is the body. And how we perceive matter comes directly to us and through us, through our body. And sensuality then becomes a spiritual pursuit as opposed to something that's a threat to the powers that be.
In the ancient world, there was a sect, a cult, that were called the Epicureans.
Yes.
And they were actually an outreach of an earlier Dionysian cult.
Yes.
Now, the Dionysian rites were shrouded in mystery and kept secret.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, today we have no records of what they were because it went to its death with the people who practiced it. But we have little hints that it had to do with what you're talking about now.
Yeah.
The Epicureans, who are we have much more records because they were around for 600 years practicing exactly what you're saying, believing that the route, the connection to spirit, was through the sensual and sensual aspects of being.
Yeah.
To entertain taste, which we associate with the Epicurean aspects but all the sensual delights, theater, music, touch, certainly sexual expression is a very big part of it. And because of the puritanical aspects, all of this was shut down. You mentioned the second and the fifth chakra points as being aspects of this particular work. And the second one we all associate with the sexual center.
Yes,
and the fifth chakra would be the one of communication.
Yeah,
is that
self-expression and communication. And creative expression. So we deal right up front with not limiting ourselves to the limited definition of creative life force as sexual energy. Our understanding of what we call sexual energy is only a part of the creative life force energy. Only a part. And it's an important part that in many cases, because of the wounded nature of our experience here, never ever gets fully and adequately expressed or experienced without a sense of distortion in one way or another. And that is a part, and we come to a place where we are at peace with that as part of our wholeness and explore some of the other aspects or bands of energy that are involved in the creative life expression or life force energy in its expression. So that's why we take 5 days. We take 5 days to go through. And I'm glad you mentioned the Epicureans, because that really does address you know, the breadth and depth that we intend to bring to this in this discovery and exploration.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dionysians too.
Yes.
Because that's that sense of joy, play, mm-hmm. and the feminine aspect of that, actually.
Yes.
Yes.
The sensuality of sensuality,
and
how
yeah.
that sensuality you know, connects you to it, spirit.
Hearing can be a sensuous pursuit of touch. And then touch what? Because you can touch things with what's beyond your five senses, and then use those the aliveness and awareness and awakeness of those senses to have a holographic understanding mm-hmm. and experience of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And the dolphins, the cetaceans, are a perfect example of spiritual sensuality.
I'll tell you, when I've entered into the water in Hawaii and looked down and felt the surrounding nature of that aqueous atmosphere, I think I've gotten in touch with a holographic sensuality
yes.
in that greater
yes.
sense. Floating free, no
mm-hmm.
gravity. Oh, yes. What a beautiful way of introducing that to your own system.
Yes. And here's another thing that people come to recognize in this experience. You know, your body is a feedback mechanism, and it's through your sensual experience that you have an intimate relationship with your environment, all things in your environment. And the more awake and aware and alive that vehicle, that feedback mechanism is, the more you experience here. And the more you experience here, the more sacred that experience, your experience, becomes. So there is something deeply, joyously sacred and whole about exploring these areas and undoing the blockages to that awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever it is, it could be linear or, you know, societal or whatever. And it's all done through talk, and there's no acting out. It is setting the intention to have a different understanding and experience of being in a body. And then the rest follows very joyously and all of that.
Hmm.
So this is not to indicate that people are, you know, doing anything that they wouldn't feel comfortable doing or any of that. It is the pursuit of the concept and then setting the attention for that to occur in your life.
Now, how does this workshop differ from the one that you call quantum sensuality?
Okay, quantum sensuality is over a period of 2 days. It is actually designed for people who are working directly with the energies of what's coming in right now. Because what we've seen with the Venus energy and the moving away of the Mars, the presence of the Mars and then the moving away, that chemicalization, especially in the area of their intimate sensual relationships, has caused a lot of misunderstanding, upset, chaos, and confusion. This is a way to ground those energies and to run those high-frequency energies through you, first by understanding what they are and what their purpose is, in a much more satisfying way, within the self and then toward others if that's your choice. And it is creative life force energy in its quantum expression, which gives it an almost alchemical nature. It's like when we look at it energetically through the eyes of the nine, there is a kind of higher frequency, more highly refined light energy that people are bringing through. And it's in every cell. So that light energy is being of a higher vibration, vibrating out certain densities. And this workshop will help to understand, you know, the quality of those densities, the origin of those dense energies or concepts, or however you want to phrase it, and then how to elegantly and gently and ecologically, let's say, release those as quickly as possible and efficiently, as quickly as possible. Then this enhances your sense of well-being. It enhances the ease and joy with which you communicate with others, because you're carrying a different energy and you're actually being a different energy without the unconscious blockages. So there's a lot of work with lineage material there, and concepts and attitudes and taboos and all of that. There is a lot of going into an understanding of where we are energetically and what else is going on around us, and the fact that being feedback mechanisms, we are picking up a lot of stuff that is not inherently our own. and we get to go through a process of disowning that which is not ours inside our field and in our subtle bodies and our physical bodies as well.
I think it's important, I want to point this out, that even though we've covered 10 different modules,
yes,
of informational workshops, it's not necessary for them to be linearly lined up. In
no.
other words, you don't have to take one before the other, but they all kind of like are biomorphized,
mm-hmm,
together.
Yes.
And a greater understanding of each aspect can be enhanced with each new workshop, I would,
yes,
assume.
Yes.
So you could take the sensual workshop without having gone through the personal mastery workshop,
yes, right,
and still have aspects of both of them working for,
yeah,
you.
Yeah, and basically the same core material resonates throughout all of it. And in the early days, it was a prerequisite to do the Cherished One. First of all, because that was the only workshop we were getting. And then as the others developed, the value of the experience of releasing the Cherished One, you know, became more evident. And now we're in such a period of acceleration. And any time that we can offer this energy and this information to people and they can respond, we know they will make great use of it.
Well, give us some dates here. You know, you have some workshops coming up.
Yes.
Quantum Sensuality is going to be offered in California.
That'll be offered here in Hawaii.
Oh, in Hawaii, okay.
Yeah, that'll be the first place it'll be offered here in Hawaii. That will be July 31st and August 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, we'll give Havingness in Napa, California, the 19th and 20th of June, and then a second Havingness in Novato on the 17th and 18th of July. And if you have friends who live in those areas and all of that, have them come to the website. We'll update it so it reflects the dates and all of that, and the schedule. And, you know, invite people. If you have taken the workshops, if you are interested in this work, if you have had a good experience with it, please tell other people. Share this. We're really, you know, on a roll here and asking your support, everyone out there, to get this energy and this work out into the world. Because after 11 or 12 years we've seen, you know, just me as an interested bystander, the kind of value that people derive from this. And it's a joy to be of service in this way. And we see that it can benefit the planet as well.
Well, you've been very generous with your time here,
you,
and it's gone very quickly. Just briefly, maybe you can tell us what's on the plate for the future. You've talked about some of the workshops coming up.
Mm-hmm.
You just alluded to the screenplay.
Yes.
You have other screenplays. I heard a book is in the process.
Yes,
what else is going on?
So currently I am personally working on a primer on the Cherished One to get that information out into the world. And with the help of my partner Patty and our friend Suzanne Schiller, we've compiled material transcripts from 8 Cherished One workshops. So it'll be a matter of editing those together and getting that to reflect the energy, which will take a month or two. I'm just talking with a publisher about that, and they're very interested. The plan is to next do a book on Havingness, a little slender companion kind of book that you can take and have your Havingness with you. And I'm also busy in Hollywood. There's interest in 5 or 6 different of my projects, Joan's story being one of them, and a strong interest in that. And I've been going back and forth, as you know, and I'll go back again in June and July and take meetings and Godspeed to all of it, because as soon as that gets out, that's another contribution.
Well, being in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm,
after being in Hawaii, mm-hmm, how would you describe the difference? And then for people who are living in a city situation,
mm-hmm,
dense population,
yes,
intense stress going on,
yes,
from just being in that. How do you cope with it, and how would you recommend that people who are stuck in that on a full-time basis cope with it?
Yes. First of all, know where you are and know that you aren't in Hawaii. You are not in Hawaii when you're in Los Angeles. And be in L.A. when you're in L.A. and plan to get back to Hawaii as soon as you can.
I love that.
The other is don't take anything personally, because being in dense populations, especially during these times of the changes and so forth and adjustments, let's say, can feel sometimes like an assault. And if you take that personally and take that in and don't ground the energy and, you know, stay in that place of centeredness and groundedness and find those things that help support you in doing that in that environment, then it can be less than a comfortable experience. And don't take things seriously. You know, it's if you know that it's the outpicturing of some fundamental changes that are needed for the planet, and it's embodied in these various forms, like the center of the media capital of the world looks and feels like the center of the media capital of the world. And if Spirit has you there to bring some portion of light to that, it will take care of you as long as you remember that and remember your function there.
So if you're standing on the edge of the volcano, be aware that you're not at the edge of the ocean.
Right, exactly.
Don't dip your toe in the lava.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. And being, and there are lots of people who are on the spiritual path who are what we call empathic, and you're one of them, and we know hundreds of them here in Hawaii. That means that you feel the feelings of others as your own. And it's good to come to recognize what is your space and what thoughts and feelings are yours, and then disinvite those things that aren't yours out of your space on a regular basis. And in fact,
lots of saging.
Yeah, lots of saging. Do your meditations. Do eyes open, walking meditations. Just stay centered and stay in your humor. And know that you're never alone. You're always, you know, companioned by something and other aspects of beingness that absolutely cherish you, and you'll do fine.
Well, that's heartening, and it's heartening to hear it from you, somebody who's in the trenches, and you'll be going back again after a short visit here to get your energy straightened up. It's been really a pleasure to share this time and space with you. I'll close the show with just a recital of a poem that I wrote a couple of years ago. It seems very, very appropriate now. I've read it once before, and maybe it'll resonate with those of you who have either not heard it or maybe heard it for the second time. This is from a website I created called The Dolphin Matrix. And so it's related to that movie that was so inspirational.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Dolphin Matrix. We create this sphere of luminosity linked by filaments of light, connected consciousness as an energy field like gravity or the atmosphere of this planet. All manners of things contribute to this web of information that spins its fractal patterns in an echoing assemblage of infinitesimal meanings. We create the matrix and bend our mind around. There is no spoon, but here on this other side, where liquid atmospheres form altered states, there is no gravity, no limits or restraints to hold us back. Hold us back from experiencing the pure joy that is. Welcome to the real world. Let's dive in.
Amazing.
Thank you, Jason, and thank you, studio audience. Studio audience. The Rabbit Yabu. Thank you, Randy, for manning the controls. Photon.net for all of your internet needs. Thank you for listening. We'll be back with you next time. This is Dolphin Us saying thank you for being here. See ya on the other side.